It is it's time for a very special episode of Webcomics Weekly, the weekly podcast where we get a bunch of people that think that they are the real deal in webcomics, and we pontificate thusly, ever thusly. we have some special guests on today's show. It's not just the typical panel of Dave, Chris, Brad, and myself. But first, since we're so egotistical, let's introduce the normal panel. From Los Angeles, California, making it work, keeping his head above water, Dave Kellett from SheldonComics.com.
What you got, Dave?
Nothing? No tagline, Dave?
Hey-o. Yeah, I'm still here. I'm
great.
Sorry.
Awesome.
He's still alive.
The enthusiasm is great.
I know, I drifted off into what I am. I'm sorry about that.
sitting probably in a corner in the fetal position and rocking back and forth is Brad Geiger, evil-comic.com.
It works for me, and it'll work for you.
There you go. There's a nice tagline. Mere reaching distance, I could reach out and touch his hand in a very genteel way, let him know, reassure him that I love him, is my partner in life and love, Christopher Straub, starslip.com.
Who wants pastries? Right? That's good, right?
That's good. That's a good tagline.
I like it.
Special guests today. Joining Dave in his studio is another David. Am I right? We got two Daves tonight?
Well, yeah, that's right.
David Malky of I don't remember you. Well, Wondermark.com.
Yeah.
Thank
you
for the sterling endorsement there. I really appreciate that.
No hyphens. Is the point.
Malky, we usually have, whenever we introduce someone, they usually have like a little tagline. So we wanted to give you the opportunity to also have a tagline.
All right. Mine will be I'm delighted to be invited. Delighted, I say. That would be the tagline.
And then, awesome. And then adding the much needed estrogen to this podcast, all the way from Virginia. It's not West Virginia, is it?
It's West Virginia.
It is West Virginia. Mountain Mama.
Mountain Mama.
That made my day.
Danielle Corsetto, girlswithslingshots.com.
Tagline pending. I'm sure it'll have Mountain Mama in there now, though.
Tagline pending. That's awesome. Tagline pending.
Just hum a few bars.
Almost.
What
heaven.
Is the basic difference between West Virginia and West Virginia, Virginia among Virginians? Like, what do you use as the
Among Virginians, it's going to be very different than among West Virginians. Among Virginians, because West Virginians, they have nothing to do with us. West, it shouldn't even have our name in it. They can't stand us, but to us, the Virginians are just full of themselves.
Okay.
And they're not West.
They're not
West. I don't know.
I see what you're saying. It's
east side.
Whatever. You're not even West. You didn't even get that part right.
You ain't West.
Is it now, West Virginia Daniel, or is it less
more
Virginia?
Sister cousin marriage combinations.
I can't answer that one for you.
Isn't that the standard West Virginia joke?
Yes, it is.
Oh, all right.
I used
not
to live.
Take the bait on that one.
I used to live in.
No.
I used to live in Vienna, Virginia.
What is Vienna?
I don't think I've heard of Vienna, Virginia.
It's near.
It combines all the artistic culture of Austria with West Virginia.
It's near Fairfax. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
So, today, all-star studded Webcomics Weekly, expertise expanded by 1,000. So,
you know what I think might be a fun idea before we get into questions is, since they're guests, why don't we let Dave and Danielle bring up any topic that they might want to cover in the world of webcomics?
Do it. Let's do it. Let's start with ladies first. Let's start with Dave.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. That's good. Well, I mean, Kellett told me to wear a skirt, but I didn't know that would be the reason.
Cold-blooded. All right.
Now, you know what? I don't mean to put you on the spot, Dave, but is there anything, any topic that we've missed so far that, well, you know what? We'll be good. Why don't you tell the listeners how you create Wondermark? Because you do a very, very different process than the rest of us do, I think.
Well, yeah. All of you guys have, what I might consider artistic ability, whereas I just crib from guys who are a lot better than all of you. I have a collection of 19th century books that I scan the images from and recomposite them into comics, and sometimes the images are taken directly, and other times I do a fair amount of manipulation with them to make them fit, you know, whatever joke or whatever. And I try to stick with taking images from primary sources as much as I can instead of, like, clip art books. I try to put my own stamp on it as much as I can to, you know, make it so that not every panel is just a copy-paste, although sometimes, you know, it is. And it's just, in my opinion, it's just another way of making it visually interesting while still, you know, being able to make a cool comic. I can't draw as well as these artisans in the 19th century, and, you know, but I can still crib their expertise to make my stuff look great. And I get a lot of people that come up to me at shows and everything, and I actually was at the Stumptown Comic Fest in Portland this last weekend, and it was a great show. And I recommend, you know, everyone check that one out when it comes around next year. But I had one guy come up to me, and I have one of my old books on display always at my table just to get people to
the feeling.
Have them come over and look at the table, and, you know, they ask what it is, and I explain the concept of my comic. And this one guy got this really offended look on his face, and he goes, "So you don't actually draw your comic, you just copy and paste." And I said, "Well, you know, sometimes it's a little more complicated than that, but, you know, it's kind of a different thing that I do." And he looked like I slapped him in the face. He's like, "And you're making comics? I just can't read this. I mean, whatever. I'm sure that's fine, but I just..."
I'm sure that's fine.
For me, it has to be, you know, I just can't read it. The point is, I mean, I don't hear it often, but sometimes, you know, people think that it's a shortcut or it's somehow easier when, you know, I think I take a lot of time and it takes just as much time.
Philosophically, Dave, how far are you willing to push it in terms of manipulation? Like, do you have a limit, or would you rather it be closer to the original?
Oh, no, not at all. I would actually rather make it more unique as much as I can. And a lot of times it's dependent on the source material. Other times it's dependent on the amount of time that I have, time and patience. There have been some cases I can think of, strips, where, you know, I've used 40, 45 different elements to create one comic that are all cut and pasted. And you know, I've hand-drawn some pieces of it, and it looks nothing like the original. And if I do my job right, then you can't really tell, because I try and make it look as authentic as possible. But I would rather that my stuff, you know, even if you were to find my original books that I take the images from, I'd rather that you look at it and say, "Oh, I didn't even recognize it," because as far as I'm concerned, it's just source material. It's not, you know, anything that I am particularly interested in making sure that it stays unmodified.
Yeah. Isn't all that stuff subjective anyway? It'd be funny if that guy's like, "You're not a real cartoonist like Jim Davis," and then it cuts to Jim Davis walking into his studio with a cup of coffee, looking over the shoulder of the guy really drawing a strip and going, "Yeah, I like it, it's good." And then walking out.
Back to the golf course for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's the eight guys, you know, in the big round writer's room. It's like, "We've got the gag for the next 3 weeks of Garfield right here, Jim. What do you say?" And
he looks at the list and goes, "Yes, yes, no, 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 yes, no. Thanks."
And then his cell phone rings. "Oh, honey, they're just killing me at the office here today."
I picture.
I had to say yes 6 times and no 3 times. I mean, if this keeps up, I'm going to be hooking them to the left all afternoon.
I'm only halfway through with my cup of coffee. If I had to talk anymore today.
These guys are killing me. Hey, you know, but that raises another point that I'd like to hear some of you guys talk about, and that is, how do you deal with criticism? Because that's something that I think affects us all to a different degree, and I think probably in this group there's a lot of good coping mechanisms. So I'm going to throw that over to Danielle. Danielle, how do you deal with criticism?
I feel like I get criticized. actually, I don't get much hate mail and I don't get a whole lot of criticism, but when I do, if it's email, I just sit back, wait a while, get out my little frustrations if I really have any, and then write a really nice email back to the person. Rarely do I get anything. I mean, I don't get people being like, oh my God, your art sucks, or like, you know, what the hell is up with the cactus, or anything like that. If I do get criticism, it's, where the hell is the comic? Like today, it's still not up. And in that case, I just tell them, you know what, I'm doing this for free. That's what I used to be able to say. Now I just try to get it on time. I don't get a whole lot of nasty emails, though.
I think the one thing you talked about there was really good, because I found that that works for me a lot, and that is when you get a really, really angry email, sending them back a disarmingly nice, gentle, polite email. Does amazing things, because you'd be surprised how many people are downright itching for a fight on the web.
Yeah.
And when you send it back a ridiculously sweet, you know, thanks for taking the time to write kind of thing, you find out that you can actually turn that person around and get some really good comments from him, where originally it was, I hate you. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I think Scott said it a few weeks ago, too, is that half the time you write someone back and say, well, you know what, difference of opinion, but I appreciate you reading and thanks for, you know, the continued support or something. And you'll get an email back within 5 minutes. Oh my gosh, you wrote back. I didn't even think you would read this. Wow. And, you know, then you sort of realize, you know what, that was a 13-year-old kid that was writing me, or a 30-year-old man with the emotional development of a 13-year-old kid that was writing me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I discovered that a lot of that hate mail is, it does not come from a place of hate or a place of frustration. It comes from a place of, if I write something nice, it's going to be buried amongst a million other nice emails, and he'll never notice it. But if I challenge him... Then maybe I have a chance of this mail being noticed. And I know that the way I describe that right now, it sounds very Machiavellian, like he's rubbing his hands together and planning it that way. But I think it on a very, I don't mean it that way. I mean on a very subconscious level. That's the case. And Danielle, I get those, or I used to, because I've consigned myself for the strip not to be late anymore, but I would get those emails too, and I only wish that hey, look, I'm doing it for free worked for me still. That played itself out a little bit for old Scotty.
Yeah. I don't know what to say now.
Can't do that anymore.
You know what though, and this is a curious follow-up question to that, is I make a genuine attempt to respond to every email I get. Do you guys, what's your policy on responding to emails as a cartoonist?
You taught me that, Dave. I mean, I used to do it, and then I ended up getting more than I want to do, or than I was able to respond to. And the ones I'll respond to are the ones with a question. But if anybody sent me an email that said, hey, I love it, and just keep up the good work, those are the guys I wouldn't write back to, because I thought, okay, that's great, and thank you. Like, honestly, that's good, but there was no interaction beyond that they didn't ask me a question, they didn't have a problem, so I'm not going to address them. But I think those are the guys you have to write back the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right.
So I think
because that is the future book sale or the person to con, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I got really bad about it, and I decided what I would do is, rather than let them back up, the minute it came in, I'm responding. And so it was, you know, hey, Scott, really love PvP. Just want to say keep up the good work. And, you know, just thanks for making me laugh all these years. And then I immediately, the minute I get it, hit respond and say, hey, I really appreciate it. It's these kind of emails that keep me going. Thank you for reading it. And I promise I'll keep drawing as long as you keep reading. And then I was so proud of myself. But what that generated for me was an immediate response. Wow, you responded that fast. Do you just sit at your computer and answer emails? So then I'm like, immediately, well, you know, I work at home and I'm here in front of the computer. So when an email comes in, I get it. And then it's, well, I've been meaning to ask you. Listen, back in.
I think beyond the first one, you're not obligated to actually have a conversation.
Well, that's good. That makes me feel
better.
It's
like the person that sends the thank you card for the thank you card.
I always let a little bit of time elapse. Even if I read the email right away, I always let at least an hour or two elapse so I don't look like I'm the guy sitting at the computer reading the emails every single second.
Talk to me!
Right.
And
I've also instituted the rule where I don't answer emails after a certain hour at night. Just because people, that way I don't want people to get the idea that I'm up all night. You know.
Yeah.
Especially when I respond to people is late at night, because that way I know they're probably not up and they won't be responding to me immediately. That's been my trick because I had the same problem, Scott. You know, I was like, I'm going to just start writing right back to these people because they're so sweet to be emailing me. And then I just have the exact same problem. They'd email me back immediately and just like, shit, what the hell? Oh, crud. Yeah. What the heck do I do?
Sometimes they surprise you when they email you back at 4 a.m. It's like, oh, I'm up too.
Want to play Halo together? I can get on in 2 seconds. But to get back to your question, though, Brad, as far as how do you answer genuine criticism, because there are going to be people that say, like, oh, I didn't really mean it. Hey, it's great to talk to you. But there are going to be people that were very serious about their criticism. And for those people, I think the older I get, the less problem I have with people. And they're rare because for the most part, I don't draw a controversial strip or a strip that, like, generates hate mail. But every once in a while, I'll touch on a topic that might get me something. And I think it's just you do yourself a service the more sure you are in your own opinions and your own place in the world, you know. And if you tend to be too conciliatory about, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't really mean that, or you actually end up not helping yourself at all in their mind or in yours. If you just say, oh, I'm sorry, difference of opinion, no big deal, I hope you keep reading and that sort of thing, you probably tend to keep that reader, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not only that, but I think there's something else that you've got to do internally as a cartoonist, and that is discern what good criticism and bad criticism is.
Yeah.
As soon as I detect a note of anger or venom or maybe a spirit of just to hurt someone's feelings, I immediately put that at a completely different part of my brain than I put the person that writes and says, hey, you know, I've been noticing you've been writing about, you know, this particular character, and you know you've got there's something wrong with the continuity you've put him in, or you've mentioned a historical fact that's incorrect, or you know something like that. That comes from a very different place of somebody actually trying to be helpful.
Yeah, and a lot of that is the diction in the email, and you can tell from a word choice whether someone's coming from a helpful place or whether they might, in all reality, have a really sad life that they're living or a sad moment in their life that they're living. No, and I'm saying this sincerely, is mm-hmm. that there's a lot of sadness in the world, and sometimes people will write you in spite or in a moment of sadness or of anger that maybe is not directed at you and maybe is more related to the life that they're living at the moment. And so you just have to separate that as an artist and say, you know what, maybe I'm not really what you're venting at here. Maybe really... you know, I triggered something that has a resonance for you in your life, but you're not really venting at me. And that's
you're talking about.
Too. So
you're
I try
talking
to,
about.
I try to ignore certain kind of comments like that as well.
You're talking
whenever
about
comments,
before you see emails.
Those comments, I always respond saying, "Screw you!
Your mom didn't love you."
That happened in our forum, yeah, Scott.
Actually, those are the comments that I actually make a rule of not responding
they can't
to.
Hear us.
If it's just someone's trying to pick a fight.
We could have our own conversation.
I don't feel like I have to have the last word. I just want to disarm it because I'd rather they sit there thinking I never got it or whatever instead of getting the satisfaction of me running back.
Right. You know what's funny? Dan Ferraro, who writes Bizarro, you know, you guys know Bizarro?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He had the funniest joke that I ever heard for this. I don't remember where he told me this, but he said that whenever he would get a truly hate mail, he would send back an email and be like, "Hi, I'm sorry for the auto-responded email, but I get so much fan mail that I can't respond to every single email. Thanks so much for reading Bizarro. I hope you keep it up, and I'm glad that millions of folks like you enjoy it every day. All my love, Dan." And I was like, that is brilliant. Oh, Dan, you are a brilliant man.
That happened in our forum, Scott. It did. It honestly happened in our forum.
Like the total snarkiness of like, it's because of millions
can they not
of
hear us?
Like you that I'm able to live my rock star life.
What did we do that they can't hear us?
I don't know.
Dave, did you talk? Was this a conversation that
hello
with you? And this will be the second time I've.
Did we break it?
reminded
I don't know.
You
what's
of something
happened?
That you've forgotten that you've done yourself. But was it you who kind of came up with the idea that we take criticism completely different than we take a compliment? In other words, you'll get 10 compliments and you'll think, that's real nice. And then you'll get one criticism and it'll just ruin your entire day. And I think it was you who came up with the idea that even from a maybe evolutionary standpoint, we put that kind of information in a different part of our brain.
Yeah, I think it's and this might be overthinking it a bit, but I think it's sort of a fight or flight response in the sense that the human brain is wired to take particular notice of a threat, I think. And I think an email or accusatory email or a criticism email in part triggers a sort of fight response that maybe a kindness doesn't. You know, like if I reach across the room right now and offer Dave an apple, it will not trigger as many synapses firing as if I suddenly go into a fighting stance. A fighting stance? Never mind. Never mind. This point is already ruined.
Dave, you should do that and see what happens, actually.
So, all right, Dave, here I come at you with my flying crane dragon style. So, my fighting stance. What am I talking about? Never mind. That was an overdone thought anyway. Yeah, that's me overthinking it. But yeah, I think that was a con conversation, Brad, that we had where the brain responds differently to criticism than it does to praise.
Yeah.
I think that's also sort of unbalanced by the fact that you're going to hear more criticism over the internet than you're ever going to hear in person.
Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, even if people come up to you at a con and say, I love your work, they're rarely going to come up to you in person and say, hey, I hate your work. Even if they do, they're just going to ignore you.
Right.
And
right.
Whereas on the email, you know, there's nothing stopping them from just dashing off, hey, screw you, just for no reason. And you just have to learn to brush that off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Scott, you out of all of us, I think you probably deal with this because I know in the past reading your strip, I've seen different things come up. What do you do to kind of deal with this kind of subject?
Can you hear me? You guys can hear us?
Yeah.
We've been talking to you guys. We've been trying to get your attention for the last 4 minutes. When you guys hear the podcast, you can hear me and Chris going, why can't they hear us? What are we doing wrong?
That's great because your voices are totally going to drown us out in the master recording. So it's going to be us talking in the background. And going, why can't they hear us? What's going wrong?
But no, it's I sound like
that's why I kind of threw it over to you because I was like, geez, you guys haven't been saying too much.
I sound like a real I'm going to sound like a real a-hole on these podcasts because it's a lot of me going, yeah, I agree. I really think and then there's not new guys don't stop. And it just sounds like I'm trying to horn in on every conversation.
You know what it is? I think the signal is spread across so many lines with six people on that it gets pretty spread out for the rest of us.
Well, what I was going to say.
I had something to say, too, if I may, actually.
Chris had something to say, so go ahead, Chris.
How you guys doing? No, it had to do with the... I know, have we moved on from it? It had
no,
to do
no,
with
no, no,
this,
no.
This morning on the forum, some guy came in, and he, on HalfPixel, I know it's not the same as email, but they said, God, you guys are jerks, Scott and Chris. And
no, he didn't say you guys are jerks.
Well, he said Scott was a jerk, and I was his lackey. And I locked the thread, and I said, no, that's why comments are not active on PvP because of that stuff. And he PM'd me. He's like, well, this is the last time I'm going to interact with you guys. I said, because you guys can't take criticism. I said, you didn't criticize us. If you want to criticize us, you can. Go back in there and post what you just wrote to me, because he had the criticism in that PM.
Oh,
but
what was his real? Let me. I just want to read to these guys what it was because this is what I get. This did you lock it?
I did lock
did
it.
Did you erase it?
No, it's moved down the page. I'm sure.
Well, where?
Well, what he said doesn't matter. The point I'm trying to make is
no. I have to read it. It's
read
cathartic.
It to yourself silently.
No,
you just get to the point of it.
The point is that I think that a lot of people don't even realize they're like, I'm going to give them some criticism. You're an ass. That is not criticism. You know, they don't even realize that that doesn't, I can't take that and go, you're right, I need to change that. I need to work on that. So, yeah.
I have somehow, and I'm sure that there's a reason for it, but I have somehow developed this reputation as someone who can't take criticism, and it's become this go-to argument point to where people will come in and go, they'll say something incredibly offensive about me or my work. When I come in and I say, all right, don't you think you're taking that a little too far? Their response is, whoa, here we go. Kurtz can't take criticism. Everybody just has to love your work, don't they? So, I'm looking for criticism in Google Analytics. I just can't look at it objectively in emails.
Yeah.
But see, here's what I've done, guys. And this is a policy that that I've instituted to keep myself sane. I have come to terms with the fact that if I'm going to take an email where a guy writes me and tells me that I'm a hack and a jerk and that I'm everything wrong about comics, and I am going to dismiss it and say, well, that guy's a jerk, I'm going to dismiss that email, then to be fair, I have to dismiss the email of the person that thinks that no matter what I do, it's awesome. You know? I have to throw out both extremes, and then the middle is what's true. And that's what I act upon.
You know what, though? I actually respect that way of handling things, but I actually disagree. When I it's hard to do, but whenever I get a moment of praise or a kind word said, I genuinely try to internalize that, and I try to forget as quick as possible the criticism. Because I've found that it just does no good, and it actually helped me to focus on the positive aspect of what readers are saying. Yeah. But I can respect the way you handle it, though, that there's a happy middle ground. But
I'm just trying to be true. I take it very seriously. It does affect me. I wish it didn't. But when someone writes me and says something nasty to me, it does affect me. And
Sure. And that's why I also say, too, this goes back to my long earlier point, is that when you cultivate a cult of niceness, you'll find that that you'll get far kinder and more generous emails when you've done little things like respond to every email or say a kind word to people at cons or go out of your way to help somebody. You'll get back very nice emails.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
And I think that we can probably leave it at that point unless you guys have any... anything
else? All I can say is I have seen Scott Kurtz drink a glass of water, and I think it's brilliant.
I think it's wonderful what you do.
The next subject I want to talk about, I know it applies to me. I know it probably applies to all cartoonists, is how do you juggle being a cartoonist and also being an accomplished pilot? Now,
well, Danielle, do you want to weigh on this first?
You know what, Dave?
Well, I mean, the obvious choice.
Just to pick random, might as well just to be fair. Malky, why don't you go ahead and chime in on?
You know, it's actually funny that you bring it up. I mean, I'm a pilot just recreationally, just because I think it's fun. But it's a whole different world because so many pilots come out of things like the military, and this is not true always, but in general. You're going to find that people who make comics are going to be more liberal slightly, and the people who are pilots are going to be more conservative. And it's actually kind of fun to go to the airport and just – it's almost like being dunked in a vat of cold water just to get a whole different view of the world where you got people talking about like, oh, those Minutemen down at the border, they're protecting God's country and this kind of thing, you know. And, I mean, this isn't really related to anything except that it's funny to get a different perspective and sort of remind myself that there's more points of view out there in the world than the I'm exposed to.
Yeah.
That's actually probably, without intending to be, that's actually probably a really good point for cartoonists in general, is just to occasionally expose yourself to people and ideas that are diametrically opposed to what you normally read or think.
Wow, yeah, I didn't intend for that to actually be fulfilling, but it really was.
I mean, it's awesome. Awesome. Oh, God, you don't know what you're... Oh, great.
Wow, Rat. That was a really great answer. I'm going to do more gag questions.
Are there more?
Mailbag?
Mails? Hold on.
Mailbag. Well, Chris, you had one you wanted to bring up. Mailbag, did you?
Oh, yeah, this one will be interesting, I think, here. hello, gentlemen. I'm finding the show beneficial, bloody bloop. I'm curious to hear your guys' take on neo-comics and hyper-comics, that is, comics that are more than just 2D images on a screen. As far as I understand, neo-comics include interactivity, sound or music, some animated content or panel transitions, a layout that isn't page-based, and other multimedia elements that don't translate well to print. And then she gives some examples. Aside from being curious about your initial impressions and thoughts, what makes it a neo-comic successful? What about it constitutes a comic? And when do you think it transitions over to a different art form? This is a very artistic question. I don't know that I...
The broader question is sort of what makes a comic a comic.
Right. But as far
this
as the...
Actually, I've thought about a lot because... You know, every now and then I get this criticism that what I do isn't even comics. And so, you know, I've started to think about what makes a comic. And in my opinion, the freedom of working on the web is that you don't have to be a comic with a capital C in quotation marks around it. Because who cares? If your thing doesn't have panel borders and doesn't have dialogue balloons, but it has animation, so maybe it's not what Scott McCloud would call a comic, so what? People enjoy it. That's the main thing, right? It doesn't have to be on a bookshelf where it's either one thing or another.
Yeah, I think
I suppose from an entertainment standpoint, it doesn't matter. But from a genre standpoint, I think there's some interest in saying, well, a novella is not a haiku, and a haiku is not a novella, and what makes them different? You know what I mean? Like more from a...
Yeah, academically, like, sure.
Because I think I've found a slightly animated comic strip interesting. I found very animated comic strips interesting and funny, and all the way up to Homestar Runner, which is completely animated Flash stuff, fun and interesting. But I think they're very different things. I think when you go from a static panel-by-panel image to a semi-animated image, it does become a very different thing. The entertainment value is just as equal, but it becomes a very different thing in terms of...
what you call it, what kind of label you get to it.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Nomenclature?
Nomenclature and the structure of it and how it operates, basically, I guess.
I think that's that's definitely valid, but I think it's also egghead talk.
Them's fighting words, Malky.
I love as much as anybody getting into the nuts and bolts of what's this and what's that, but I think there's a time and place for categorizing stuff like that from an academic perspective, and then there's also sort of the general Joe Blow looking at his bookmarks in Firefox. It's like, hey, do I enjoy this? Do I enjoy that? Who cares what it's called? I think there's a room for that perspective as well.
I think that what actually turns me off a lot about that kind of work is not the work itself, but the kind of need that it seems to demand to be categorized differently. Like, what is the definition of this work? Well, is the work good or bad? Is the work interesting or is it gimmicky? And if it's good, then whatever you want to label, you want to put on it, you want to call it a neocomic. What differentiates a hypercomic or a neocomic? I don't know. It doesn't matter. Do people like it? Do you like making it?
I think the more you call something one thing or another, I think the more limiting it gets, because then you have people saying, oh, it's a neocomic. Well, I don't like neocomics, even if it's just, they're unfamiliar with it or whatever. I mean, I think there's more room to just say, hey, this is a cool thing that I made, and people will kind of come up with their own reactions to it free of labels.
Well, could we all agree on this then, that at the very least it should service the joke or service the entertainment? Like, I remember when it was first possible with like animated GIFs, people would have a character blinking, and you would be like, why does a comic strip need to have the character blinking? And that's unnecessary.
I definitely agree that the gimmick should not be the focal point. It should serve the story. It should serve the purpose of the storytelling and be an important, something. You should only do some kind of crazy technique if you can't do it a different way.
But explain something to me, because we're speaking in and I have Danielle accidentally got dropped out. I need to bring her back in, so let me do that real fast.
Okay.
So I want her to be a part of the conversation, and it's going to make ringing noises.
That's you, don't worry.
There we go.
All right.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. We're talking about hypercomics and things with animations and GIFs and stuff. Okay. So the thing about it, and we're speaking in general terms here, like we're speaking about comics that don't exist. Like, well, sure, if a person wanted to add that interaction, so long as it serves the entertainment. But can somebody just practically name something like that? That is effective, that works, that serves the story, that serves the. I can't think of a practical example to where it is good.
Maybe rollovers, but beyond that, I can't. Like animated stuff. It's a traditional comic strip. You're reading at your own rate, at your own pace, and it kind of like forces you to look at the animation before you look at the rest of the strip.
Yeah.
I've never liked that.
Are you talking about comics where you roll over it and then the text appears, the bubbles appear?
Or anything changes, really.
I was thinking, like, you could, that's the only way that I could think would be something you could, I don't know how to say this. I can't think of a way that you could make it really effective, but I bet there is a way because it's something that's hidden that you can roll over at your own pace.
Yeah,
but I've never seen anybody do
that. You don't see the dialogue until you mouse over. And
I think it's over at ucomics.com.
Isn't it Sam and Max, isn't it?
Yeah, Sam and Max is. And we don't like that comic.
It saves you from having to accidentally look at the last panel and spoil the joke.
Right, Brad?
It doesn't appear until you mouse over it.
I'm glad that they fixed that, because the previous 150 years we've had comics, that's always been a problem.
That's been the downfall.
That's the one thing that's been holding the medium back.
Well, that's why I kind of go back to, does it serve the joke or the storytelling at all? Because I think for the most part, once you start adding in tricks, why not just go to animation? And maybe that's me being too old-timey, old-school of, what's all this with the colors and the light? but to me, like, it's a very different type of reading. And if you're going to – it goes back to, like, when we were talking about long-form stuff on the web, is that when you're reading a comic, it's a panel-by-panel sequential read that's a 2D reception. And when you start animating into a panel-by-panel sequential thing, it kind of throws off how you read it, I think. Or at least I'm not trained to read that. Maybe that's a better way to say it, that it's not so limited, is that my experience hasn't trained me to read something that's sequential but also animated or also rollover-y or something like that, you know?
I just think I just think that I think I can we can agree that there are a lot of neat ideas in hypercomics, but I don't know that any of them are being used effectively yet. I haven't read one that had such a great story that I've said, oh man, that the fact that it was all hyperlinked and interactive was what made it necessary. I mean, that really made the story what it is. Usually it's very experimental, and I don't know that we've seen a comic yet that necessitates all these bells and whistles.
Do you guys wonder if, like, the first multi-panel strips, like, someone's reading The Yellow Kid, and then they read The Cats and Jammer Kids, and it's got three panels, and they're like, what's all this with the three panels? Why can't you say it on? what kind of confounded technology is this with the three panels? I want to go back to The Yellow Kid. This Cats and Jammer Kid stuff is ridiculous.
If you can't say it in one panel, it's not worth saying. Exactly.
I think there's always going to be, with any new technology, there's obviously going to be a period where the only time you're going to see all the tricks is the people that are feeling out the corners of what you can do. And then later on, in sort of the next iteration, it's going to be the guys that say, hey, now that I know it's possible, I can incorporate that into a story designed to take advantage of that.
That's very true. Yeah.
Now, I agree with you there, but...
I think it's sort of in a liminal state of experimentation for hyper and neo-comics then. Yeah, yeah.
I would agree with you if this conversation wasn't already at least 9 years old.
So next topic, infinite scrolling. Let's go.
Listen, from the beginning, I've always said that the point of it is only to serve the exploration of the form, and it will never serve a practicality. And there are people that agreed with that, and people that said no. Eventually, this will become the new thing, and that never happened.
Yeah, and I'll add to that is that the form of the comic strip and the rules of the comic strip and the form and rules of comic books and long form comics are respectively about 110 and I would say maybe 80 years old, and have been refined and honed and worked, and there is an audience that knows how to read it, and the format is not, or the form is not a limiter to the transmission of information, and it works for a reason, and it's kept for a reason, and that's because Get Fuzzy is just as workable as that original Cats and Jammer Kids in terms of being an effective way of a single artist to produce work on a daily basis and be funny and communicate. And maybe if you're going to step away from that, or in long-form comics, some similar rule, then it has to be a really good reason, and it has to really serve that joke or that storytelling and all that.
Yeah, I guess.
It was a bit curmudgeonly.
I know. I sound curmudgeonly. That's all right. Dave's looking at me like I'm the oldest man on the planet.
No, I mean,
and I feel that bread should only be made with wheat. I'm not sure I want this unwheated bread.
No, you guys.
I agree with you, though, Dave, because but it's a little. It sounds like you're being limiting when you say, "Well, there's a reason it's been done the way it's been done," but it's also true. You know, it sounds like you're being a curmudgeon, but you're not actually. You know, because what you say is true. So that's all I have to say.
Right. Well, you know what? Let's look at it the other way. Why does animation not say, hey, let's introduce some static images? Why does animation work? Well, it works because it's a great way to produce a passive form of communication for the audience that's very easy to follow along with and is fun and visually interesting. And why would you ever want to introduce something static into that? I don't know. Maybe it's... I am being curmudgeonly. I should shut up.
Aww.
No, I mean, this is how new art forms arise. The people experiment. People, you know, the first guy to take drawings and realize that you could order them sequentially and it would look like the mouse was running, you know, and create animation that's just how these things come about. We never would have had animation if someone hadn't experimented with new techniques.
Right.
So, and Scott, you may be right that there is never going to be a worthwhile story that comes out of hypertext or whatever, but maybe in another generation when you have, you know, a whole generation of people that grow up with the conventions of the web, whereas we kind of grew up with the conventions of print comics or whatever, then that's when we might see people that come to think about it in a different way than we can.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
I'd be really interested to see somebody do, you know, some sort of high-tech comic strip kind of thing that actually works. I've been thinking about this for so long. You know, how could you make, I wouldn't do it personally, but how could somebody do some sort of new technology that'll make a comic strip stronger? I cannot think of a single way that the stuff could make anything stronger or better.
Yeah, I think unfortunately we either need a mouse in terms of graphic novels or a Walt Disney in terms of animation to come along and show us how it could work, because none of us can really think of a way that adds value to the form.
Exactly.
So I guess the answer to the reader's question is, do it, because we all know, right?
Have fun.
We haven't seen it. We're not sure how to do it. So if you can to show us. All right, let's go on to the next question. Let me read one. Anybody want to pick a voice?
Do you have permanents at the salon? Do her.
Oh. All right. Let's do. You took the Neo Comics question. Okay, let's do crossover.
Have you all been in crossovers that at the end of the project you were less than happy with because of the stuff involved? And have you all ever thought about doing maybe a special that tied all of your scripts together, or just an original? I'm sounding like Edith. Or just an original idea that the four of y'all could take different ways and work on together? But so I think the broader question is crossovers. How do we? Are they of value to cartoonists? Are they more distracting? Are they more interesting? Are they just a marketing technique? Can there be an artistic element to them that's bigger and better than just a single strip by itself? Crossovers, go, bam, done. Danielle, take it, run with it.
Answer yes to all of those. They can be a distraction. that was the easy way out. They can be a distraction. I've had one before that I did, and I felt like it was such a distraction. It's this really odd strip in the middle of the entire archive that people are like, "What? What is this?" And it was only one day that we were all crossovering, and it was all just a marketing thing. And now I've got this random walrus that comes out of a time warp in the middle of my comic strip, and nobody has any idea what it means unless they were there that day and they knew what was going on and they were reading it online. So
yeah.
I'm probably going to take it out of the print archive when I finally do this in print. It can be a distraction. Meanwhile, I have a friend of mine who did a strip for a while, and one of his characters he decided was going to be the cousin of Hazel, and we did all these great crossovers. And as long as you introduce the characters as, you know, just new characters and not, you know, just a one-day, bam, kind of crossover thing that nobody gets, it works out pretty well. It's kind of nice. It's a nice marketing tool.
I'm going to come out strongly against this. And,
wow.
And it carries me.
Now who's the curmudgeon, Brad Geiger?
Hold on, I've got some liver spots floating on my wrist for a moment.
Brad, before you start,
yeah.
It's time for another pro tip from Brad Wigwam.
I don't know if this is really a tip, though.
It's time for another curmudgeonly moment from Brad.
I should make a stinger that goes, bum, bum, bam, meow. I don't like eggs. It's time for another curmudgeon moment.
The stinger is like, "Foodie, you poppers. Wow.
You
new things scare me."
Kids, get off my lawn.
I remember when this was all farms.
So seriously, Brad, what's wrong with you?
Here's the thing. Here at Old Man Winters, let's go.
I, I have yet to see a crossover that I wanted to read, and I'll carry this over and let everybody think I'm a complete jerk. I haven't ever picked up an anthology that I wanted to read.
You've never picked up Flight then.
Maybe not. Here's my impression of me reading an anthology. Crap. hey, this is pretty good. I like that. Very nice. Crap. I can't stand. I don't like anthologies, and I don't like crossovers.
Brad.
Kids, get off of my lawn.
Brad.
Danielle touched on it, and somebody emailed me personally for some advice, and I went over to his comic, and the first thing I saw there was a guest comic, and I said, "Listen, I come to your site to see your work. If you couldn't get work up that day, or if you didn't, you know, hit your update or your deadline, be honest about it. Try better next time. But I don't want to see a guest comic." And Danielle hit it right on the head. When people are going through your site and all of a sudden they get this thing that isn't drawn the way you draw, it isn't the same kind of humor that you write, it's a ridiculous bad experience for the writer. I'm completely against it.
Brad, what do you think of the crossover I'm doing?
I like it. I'll tell you why. I like it, and I'll tell you why. It fits completely into your style. You're writing it. You've got all the control over it. All you're doing is picking up characters from other people. It's a standalone storyline. I got no problems with that. It's when somebody else is trying to draw my stuff and fit it onto my site that I've got a real problem with it.
Well, I guess you don't want to do a guest strip for me in a little bit, huh, Brad?
There goes that question.
No, but he doesn't want you to do a guest strip for him is what it is. It's
cutting my own throat because I did do a guest strip for PvP, and I got a tremendous amount. And people still walk up and say, "Oh yeah, I started reading your strip when you did the guest for PvP."
First and last time, asshole.
I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
And that's not going to happen again in a heartbeat. So don't.
But I had to when I started doing this crossover, I was very against the idea of crossovers. I'm very against the idea of guest strips in either in continuity or outside of it, just because it breaks the flow of people reading your strip, just like you believe, Brad. And the same way is that the only way that I would do this Ultraverse War at Starslip is if I was able to take that license and say, I'm going to write it and not. Because I know that when somebody's ship blows up because they are fighting, I know that somebody's going to say, look, that wouldn't happen because I have this special weapon and you didn't pay attention to my...
Chris, I believe you've forgotten that the Tagalong has super shields that can block the...
But I knew that would happen. That's happening in the forums. But that's also the good part of it is that they're engaged in the forums. Like, they wouldn't have beat this ship because of this and the other thing.
I think you guys are discounting the great response I got to the PvP Wondermark crossover when everyone loved when Brent was hanging out with that guy pointing to the left.
He's my favorite character.
I'm going to take you up on it, Scott.
I'd love to do it. Hey, my artwork's clip art enough, dude. Just wait 75 years. You'll be making PvP once it's in the public domain. Brad, as much as I gave you a hard time, Brad, I agree with you. And I've done
to go back to Danielle's point. Oh, sorry, Scott. I cut you off.
No, that's fine. Scott, let's go back to Danielle.
would you pipe down over there in LA and let Scott go?
Can anyone hear me?
I can barely hear you. You sound like an old 80-year-old woman with low lung capacity.
What I was trying to say.
This is what I hear from Scott. He's like, hear me. I'm trying to talk over here.
That's fine. Just
Scott,
shut up.
I was just about to say that he agrees with me. Would you let him go?
Brad, I have to agree with you. I've done a couple crossovers recently. I've done one recently, and I'd like to do another one with Chris. And it's because if you can do a crossover where it works, if people don't have to see the other side, if it just works standalone as if it were just your strip, then it's fantastic. And I recently did a crossover with Paul Southworth at Ugly Hill. And the reason why was because I had an idea that Skull would be watching his favorite TV show, Ugly Hill, where all the characters are monsters. And he was lamenting the fact that he didn't live in that fictional world because If he did, then he wouldn't be different and he would be liked. And so I had a dream sequence where he ended up in Ugly Hill and discovered that, you know, even when everybody is a monster, it's just as difficult. So it was an interesting character development thing to explore. And then at the same time, I got to send Paul Traffic and got to play with his characters. And I would love to cross over with Starslip because I'm dying to do a PvP in space storyline. And I'm just dying to do that. So, but I agree with you, Brad. It's difficult to do something on your site that you know is going to be for just a small subset of people, and that, like Danielle said, eventually just won't even see print.
Right, and not only that, I think that you stepped on a really key point. These things can be good if you choose your partners well and keep it to a limited group. You know, sometimes you see some of these crossovers where it's like Fright Night, for example, just to pick on them since we're in October. I've done that a couple of years, and I've seen, you know, the results of my work and the results of other groups and stuff. And it always seems like you've got one guy that really, really hits it, and then another one that just doesn't bring it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's why I don't like working with people.
Brad, well, let me tell you something though, Brad, and let me let you in on a little secret that maybe is going to piss some people off. Nothing reinforces people's appreciation of your work than when you put up some guest strips. Don't pick the good guys. Don't pick the guys better than you to do guest strips. You don't want to hear that they're upset you're coming back.
Wait a minute. How many of us have done guest strips for PvP?
I know. I was going to say.
Look,
I
look. Oh!
Really hey, take it in, man. What are you talking about? All right. Okay.
I'm not doing another PvP strip again.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves here.
I think you touched on something interesting where you're talking about wanting to do PvP in space and that sort of thing. It gives you an opportunity to do something different with your characters that you might not otherwise do just in the regular run of your strip.
Yeah, like and put them in space.
Which is that if you do it, it's got to make sense. Like Daniel, you were saying, like it's sort of a cousin thing, or it's a character from out of town, or that sort of thing. If it has an internal logic, and as Scott was saying, I think Brad was saying, if it makes sense on that day by itself, then bam, good idea, crossover works. If it doesn't, and you need to have some like this convoluted path of strips that you need to have read, and you need to have known the Necronomicon and the Lost Shakespeare's work. One's ever read. I mean, then what's the point of the crossover? You've alienated your existing readers and you've gained no new ones. So,
right,
it's got to work on a standalone basis. And you know how Mad About You and Friends had that crossover character of what was her name? The
Phoebe's
character?
Sister, Ursula.
Phoebe's sister. Like that actually worked because if you watched either show on its own, both of those characters worked by themselves, and you didn't need to be a Friends watcher, and you didn't need to be a Mad About You watcher, and they made it work. And I think comics have to do a similar thing with crossovers.
Here's a crossover that I can't stand, and everyone should stop doing it, okay? If you're an up-and-coming webcomic, and you just put my character somewhere in the background and then email me as if it's a big deal and I should link to you, I do not appreciate those crossovers. Especially when the follow-up strip is that character gets pooped on because I didn't link your strip. But Brad, I gotta disagree with you, man.
That
some
really
of the,
happened?
Huh?
That really happened?
Let's not talk about it. But Brad, I have to disagree with you because nothing gets me charged up and excited than seeing some great other artists do their takes on my characters. I just love it. I love seeing it. And this is not a suck up, but the number one requested or the number one complimented guest strip ever was the one Dave did for me with the panda punching in
really?
And out of it. Yes. Yes.
Wow.
That one is the most response I ever got from a guest strip, Dave, was that strip.
Oh, that's nice. I was going to give you the original for that. Did I ever give that to you?
You did. I have it at home.
Oh, okay, good.
You gave it to me in San Diego.
Good. Because I had it on my desk for about a year.
So that I could easily get it home in one piece on a flight. with no bumps or folds or creases. It was awesome.
It was magical.
Is this your way of saying it got ruined on the flight home?
It didn't get ruined, but it was difficult getting it home and
you antiqued it. It's fine.
I antiqued it.
It's good.
Well, you know what? While Brad, since Brad brought up the topic, I would love to dive into it for just a second, if we could, which is anthologies, because they're really big, I think, in a different climate of for cartoonists, but maybe not so big in others. And I'd love to get everybody's thoughts about anthologies and why they work or don't work, or in what situations they work.
I agree with Brad on the, you know, crap. Oh, that's a good one. Crap. But I've been doing quite a few anthologies lately. I'm actually working on one right now. And they're fun if you're working on them. It's like, you know, 7 pages and, you know, you're having a good old time working with a different writer or a different artist. And, you know, you get to see the book when it comes out. And there's some crap, but, you know, there might be some really good stuff in there. And you're like, wow, I get to be in the book with this guy? It's pretty cool.
But what are the nature of these anthologies? It's not your own strip again, right? I mean, are you doing like a completely original and new thing that you may never even re-pick up later?
That's what I've been doing.
They usually have a theme too, anthologies.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like everything is about butter or something.
I really...
It's a good one.
People slathered in butter.
Butter.
In butter.
I wasn't going that way, but thanks, Dave. That's crazy.
People eat butter.
So pick up.
You've got to take it to its logical end, Dave.
Hey, guys. I have a story in the upcoming butter-themed anthology. I can't believe it's not comics.
Dear editors of Butter, I am upset that you turned out my submission of the Planet of the Butter People.
No.
Anthology that I think would be more interesting, and you guys can tell me if this exists because I'm not sure that it does. But one person that I think can modify his style and write for a lot of different themes and draw a lot of different ways is actually Chris. And I would love to see an artist-specific anthology that touches on like 7 different stories that are totally different, drawn totally differently, and written totally differently. I think that would be more interesting to me.
That would be cool.
One-artist anthology?
A different word for that, where it's all one artist. It might just be like a collection by one artist. I think...
Yeah. But it's sort of the equivalent of like a collection of O. Henry stories that are all written by one author,
yeah.
but written differently. I don't know how to explain that. Like when Chris does different strips, he draws them totally differently.
Right.
Let's copyright it right now. Here it is. You ready? An anthology done by one person is a one-thology.
Anthology. Oh, I thought you were going to say butter-related something.
Just copyright with the circle over it.
Ding, it's called a butter-thology.
Hold on a second.
Well, I do have a good one. Okay.
Copyrighted me. All right. If it's got a stinger in it, you know it. I just copyrighted it. Sorry, guys. No stinger for you guys. I got to tell you, Dave and Brad and Danielle, I've agreed with you in the past about anthologies, but I think that we've gotten really lucky lately, and I hate to, toot the horn of the people that publish me, but Image, I think the Flight books, I know they're not with Image anymore, but... they were discovered by Image, even if the people drawing the book forgot that and abandoned them. But I'm not bitter. But Eric Larson discovered those guys, and Image really helped them get well-known. The Flight books are really more good than crap. I mean, most of it's brilliant, and then the rest of it is good, as opposed to good and crap. And then Image has put out a couple collections. God, I can't think of what they're called now. 24/7 was one of them. But one of them was basically, you know, Image saying, hey, let's do Flight, but let's get everyone that works at Pixar to do something. And that was an anthology. I'll do my research on that and come back next week with it. But there are some really, really good anthologies out there that are worth your time.
Doesn't the European system rely more on anthologies as a way to foster sort of farm talent and get new people into the system?
That's all it is in Japan. It's all anthologies.
That's true. All the huge. Have you ever seen one of those Japanese like telephone books of manga? And it's like, good lord.
No, but I'm jealous of it. I would love
like three,
to do something
like
that.
It's like $3 in yen. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
Because you're thinking to yourself, how is this artist making money? And then you remember, oh yeah, wait, they sell 25 million of these on newsstands. Well, you know, I was looking at the Japanese market online, real quick, just for a fun little guess. What's the most heavily published or biggest circulation newspaper in the U.S.? And how many editions does it sell?
Wall Street Journal?
Nope, that's I think second or third.
New York Times.
USA Today, and it's got about 5 million people. Guess the top 5 newspapers in the world, what country are they in?
Japan.
And guess what the average readership is of that average top 5 newspaper?
20 million.
15.
Wow.
Yeah, but David, that's just pure concentration. I mean, if you throw a stick in Japan, it hits 20 people before the stick hits the ground. There are just more people there.
The United States is 350 million, and I think Japan is, what, 80, 90 million people? And everybody reads everything because it's all this metro society of taking a train everywhere.
You're thinking of China, Scott.
But it's such a manga infused culture.
You're being racist, Scott. It's China.
That are manga, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, that's just the culture, and when you. I got nothing to say, really.
Ladies and gentlemen, David Falcon. David Falcon. Yeah.
It was going to be really good, guys. It was going to be really good.
That's just society.
I was 5 minutes. I got to say something about something over. Well, I'll tell you what. I do have one pro tip that I want to share. You got your stinger ready?
Oh, yeah. You got a pro tip for us?
Sting one pro tip on Empower.
Scott's over my head.
It's time for another pro tip from Brad Wigwam.
Here's your pro tip for the day. If you're going to do an anthology, obviously you're going to be dealing with a whole lot of different people, and everything's got to get done at the same time. So someone has to assign themselves the keeper of the deadline, and you've got to set deadlines and enforce them, even if it means booting somebody from the book.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to have the whole book go down. I've been involved in this before where, you know, a book that we were doing for 2006 came out in 2006, December of 2006, because one guy held up the entire process and nobody wanted to be the bad guy and say, hey, maybe this isn't the book for you. So if you're going to be a part of an anthology, set a deadline, keep the deadline, even if that means telling people that maybe they got to wait for next year.
That's actually a good point. And you know what, Malky, the anthology you guys worked on with Ryan North's Machine of Death, I was really upset that you did not include the story that I promised I would submit but didn't. I wish you would have waited.
I heard it was going to be really good, but then, yeah, since you didn't write it, it was hard to include it.
Yeah, I know, it's rough.
I think Brad is our new curmudgeon. If you're doing an anthology, someone's got to stand up and be willing to cut off the remoras that are sucking the life out of this shark.
That's got my good old laugh in there.
Well, folks, have we covered most topics that we wanted to cover today?
Listen, we've gone 64 minutes. We've had two guest hosts, and we have obliterated our clean tag. This is totally not going to have a clean tag on it. And I say that is good stuff.
We may have to do that. Unless somebody else is willing to go through and find the moments.
We just put the naughty word tag on it, right?
Well, yeah, but if we ever collect this anywhere else,
then we'll
cut it out.
Yeah.
And add better guests too. So in post.
And then you hear in the background, you hear Malky go, "Why I never." He just flies off.
I was doing that. I actually was doing that.
Oh.
Well, he's in his car now.
Jeff Smith, the show.
It's faked. It may be impersonated.
I see.
Where did Brad go? Did we lose Brad?
Aw.
Brad?
Oh, what a shame. Oh, it looks like I'm taking his place from now on. I guess I'm not really, though.
You killed him.
Hurt his feeling.
What happened to him?
Well, shall we wrap it up without Brad? We're pretty much done anyway.
Brad!
I think I told you guys going over time. He's just like, I gotta move this thing without you guys. I gotta cut you guys off.
He's still recording where he is. All right, I don't know what those guys are talking about, but let me finish.
Brad?
Brad, we love you.
Brad, if you can hear us, we can't hear you. Brad's still going. He doesn't even realize we stopped. He's like, and another thing. And another thing. Color. I don't like it. I like comics, black and white. And none of these speakies. I'm sick of these speaky comics. I want comics with no words. If you can't tell me what's happening by the way you draw the movement, then I don't need to know about it.
Erasers. Who uses them? People that make mistakes. That's who.
Well, let's
right, well,
finish
gotta,
it there then.
Go, so let's wrap it up.
All right.
So with a puppy's kiss
and a butterfly smile.
A flower.
There you go.
Let me get our outro music.
And the wink of an elf.
I should have had this prepared.
Rainbow's back massage. Can I put a brief plug real quick before we go?
Oh, yeah.
If you guys are going to be at the Small Press Expo in Maryland, right, Dave and Chris?
That's
oh,
right.
Oh, yeah, and Brad and, yep,
and Danielle.
We have the four of us and my good friend David Malky. And
yeah, I'm going to be there with Jeff Jack, Snicker, which a couple other guys. And I'm nominated for an Ignatz Award this year. And the award is determined by the votes of people at the show. So I would encourage everybody to look at spexpo.com, carefully consider all the nominees, and then vote for me.
Thank you for that unbiased plug, David.
Was that the Dave of Wondermark? Because you all
yeah.
sound the same to me.
Oh, all men sound the same.
We all have the same soothing dulcet tone.
Yeah, this is Dave Malkin, Wondermark, nominated for Ignatz Award. Please mark your ballot on the SPX, and I'll get to take home a brick, maybe.
So just to reiterate, that was Dave Kellett of SheldonComics.com. Please
can you forge an Ignatz? Is it literally a
no,
brick?
No, but
it's literally a brick on a wooden stand.
If the Ignatz voting is the way it was when I was there last time, there are write-in votes.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. Now can you hear me?
Yay!
Hey, big bomb!
Norm!
Hey, Brad, you're back!
I gotta tell you, major props on the eraser joke from about 5 minutes ago. I was
so we're out of time. I'm sorry, Brad.
It's good.
Okay, now listen. I screwed this up last week, so can I do the outro this time?
Yeah, go for it.
Yes.
All right. You've been listening to Webcomics Weekly with your four merry friends and their two friends. As always, way over in Los Angeles, the sparkling Dave Kellett from Sheldon Comics. That's at www.sheldoncomics.com.
Thank you, Wigwam.
And over there in Texas is the inimitable Christopher Straub. He brings you Starslip Crisis every week at www.starslip.com.
Live strong.
Don't crack me up. Right across the table from him is two-fisted Scott Kurtz. He does PvP, player versus player, at www.pvponline.com. Our two guests who have been wonderful to put up with us so far today is the high-flying David Malky. He does Wondermark at wondermark.com.
Delighted to be invited.
And the sparkling and bubbly Danielle Corsetto. She does Girls with Slingshots. Go to slingshots.com. Also daniellecorsetto.com.
I kind of just awe at everything, so that could be my...
And this has been Brad Geiger giving you your 40-minute outro.
Brad, what's your website?
www.evil-comic.com. Wow, my grandkids are born. Good job, Brad.
Is that preceded with HTTP? Is that internet? Is that hypertext transfer protocol, or is that FTP? Do I need SMTP into that, or I don't know how to? How many colons?
Bad news, guys. Skynet just came online. We're also.
All right, guys. Thanks for good show, Brad. Thank you for the Bible-length outro. That was great.
Thanks, guys.